Hi, I'm Paul Warren.
And I'm Ryan Klein.
And this is another episode of SEO's Dead and Other Lies. Well, we got a great episode today, guys. We're continuing our series talking about Google My Business ranking signals. So we've been kind of going down the list of White Spark's hierarchy of what's most important. Today, we're going to be talking about review signals, which, based on the most recent 2023 analysis, accounts for about 16% of all signals for ranking your Google business listing. I know from personal experience how important this is, and we work on a lot of clients where this can be a big issue and a big factor showing up in the Map Pack rankings altogether. Ryan, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I completely agree. I mean, the review portion of this is completely make or break in a lot of instances because we've definitely gotten to a point where people get really high on GBPs and they're all about getting these offices and vetting them out and making sure that they fit all the criteria we're looking for. And then we say, great, now can you get the reviews? And they go, well, I can't even get really reviews from a main location. And that might be the reason we don't even pursue the campaign at all because of how important they are.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's sort of missing from this overall study is a review's ability to filter out a location altogether from showing up in the map pack outside of maybe directly in front of the building. And even in some instances, not even at all for a service that you actually provide. And we see it pretty often in the legal space, depending on the population around a location, can determine how many reviews you're really going to need to be competitive and show up. We see with locations that are in super, super competitive areas, maybe like New York City, something like that, you really don't start showing up until you hit over that 30 mark for like the amount of reviews and them sort of regularly coming in. And things that are a little less competitive, it tends to be around 17, maybe 20, which it's really interesting because it's a very stark difference from where it was maybe 2 years ago, where you really could just open up a listing, just show up organically without having to force a bunch of reviews on it. And so it's become an issue for like a lot of businesses putting together some sort of system to regularly generate reviews and having it. So I think what we've seen, it's not just it's definitely the total number to a certain point. I think there's like diminishing returns that we've seen there, right? Because like some of them have like, if you have like you have like 200, are you going to be any better if you have 300?
Right. Yeah, I know that that's a different story as far as like consumer behavior for click-throughs. It's one thing to even, not get filtered out where we see, the minimums over the years went from you could be on the map pack with no reviews. And that was hilarious because, not even one 5-star review would be present. And then what you saw, 8 and then 14 and 20 and then in some instances 30. And then later on, yeah, if you're in a competitive area, and you have 100 and you're ranking well, you still might not get the click through when it comes to people you're up against at 300, 400, 500. That's a significant, disparity. So
Yeah,
that
I think
makes
if
it.
you're at the 300, are you going to have better rankings if you get to 400? And to my experience, you get an initial boost when you get hit to you hit a certain number of reviews. You don't really see that boost again if you doubled that amount, right? So there are definitely diminishing returns. But what we do see is over time, maybe over a 3-month period of time, is that if you're not generating reviews at a regular rate compared to the competitors in the space around you, you will see a drop in Map Pack rankings from that. And so it's first initially the total amount, but then a continual slow drip, I guess, based on, I think they base it really on the same amount that the competitors are slowly dripping in around you at the same time. So I guess if you got more of them during that time frame, you'd see a boost over them as well. But again, I don't think it's like, well, if I get 100 more, am I gonna be at 100%? I'm gonna go from 50% to 100% share of voice in the map pack, and I just don't think that's the case at all.
Right. And that being said, there would be a strategy back in the day, and we can probably talk about some review platforms. We used BirdEye 6, 7 years ago, and they're definitely a viable option. The reason that we had stopped using them for just different reasons with like the point of contact and some of the more like enterprise or agency arrangements, and now we use GatherUp and there's plenty of platforms, and I'm sure they're all very, very similar in a lot of ways. But the goal would be that, okay, you have a main location, it has plenty of reviews, and you have two satellite offices, they have zero reviews. You'll send them this this email or this request. They'll leave the review at a different location that maybe they even, conducted business at. I don't really know the difference. All they do is kind of see like the chance or the opportunity to leave that review. Doesn't really make a difference what location it is. Then you pile in, 20, 30, 40 reviews there. Then you swap it to another location. Then you swap it to another one. And so, only one location is getting all those reviews for a certain period of time and technically neglects the other ones. But that's not ideal nowadays because we're talking about frequency, the velocity, the consistency that you really need across all locations at any given time.
Yeah, so I think we can dive into a few techniques that you can use if you're listening to this podcast and you're having the issue generating reviews that we've used with other clients and just things that we recommend. Some are a little more costly and then some are pretty cost efficient ways of doing it. So I'll start with my favorite one, which has gained a lot of popularity pretty recently, and that's just getting a business card with a QR code. That'll direct people directly to your Google business listing, wherever that location might be, wherever you want to point it, and ask for a review. And that's one of the easiest things that you can do. If you have an office, you can put that right up on your desk there. People can really quickly easily scan it while they're checking out. Or you can get a sticker of it. You can put it on a receipt or something like that. So in a way, it's sort of a soft ask, right? You're not having a rep actually ask that person, or you're not actually asking that person, but it's there. It tells you to do it. And over time, it does generate a good amount of reviews. And the price point to entry to that is very, very cheap. I mean, we're talking maybe like $20 to get some stuff printed out for it, but a really easy way to get things rolling.
Is that the card that they have at the office, or some sort of stamp, something that people that they go to the physical location, they scan it and get the review, or they're also like, business card type of things where you're out and about and you can get people leave reviews by scanning a QR code, or they're both just unique approaches?
Yeah, the same companies sort of offer multiple products of the same thing. So one's sort of a hard plasticky self-standing little thing that you can put on a desk, but then you can get that in card format, or you can even get it in sticker format, right? So just depending on where you're meeting your customer at. So maybe you're meeting them at their house, or and you're giving them a receipt and it's a service type of thing, or they're coming into your physical location. There's a solution for it, but the thing to remember is to you want to have that front and center so they're physically seeing it, right? And it's a reminder to do it. You make it as easily as humanly possible for someone to leave you a review, there's a much higher chance of them actually doing it versus if they have to actually look you up on Google all on their own.
Well, absolutely makes sense. And then of course, there's the incentive side of things. And so, we work with a lot of lawyers, and it's kind of hard to incentivize them in different ways because you're not really supposed to spend money or give them, gifts for that kind of thing. But there are clever things that you can do. And if you're like most businesses, you can give X a gift card, you can give a month free of your services, you can do all sorts of clever stuff. It just depends if you ever calculate what a good 5-star review really means to you, what the value is. And some people it's 20 or $50, and some people I'd argue it's a few hundred dollars.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Depending on the niche that you work in, some reviews can be worth sort of their weight in gold, and especially if they have keywords left in those reviews, which are a great additional thing that you can do with your listings. The next step up from this is a little more complicated, and it requires a little more, I wouldn't say management, just a little more technical management, and that's sort of automating this process. Now, there's a lot of tools that kind of have out of the box solutions for this. BirdEye is one of them. There's a lot of tools like reputation.com that have sort of things built in that you can connect to a CRM, right? So if you're really tracking information about your customer, you're keeping a sales database of these people, you can fire these things to go off after a job is completed or something is purchased, whatever it is that you want, and send them either a text or an email to do that. Both of those are really good options. I always recommend sending out an SMS text requesting for a review because one, it's going to their phone. There's a really high likelihood they're logged into their Google account already on their phone, and it just makes it a lot easier. And I think still today, the number one tool to send out texts for that is called Twilio. And depending on your needs, how big of a business you are, could be pretty expensive. If you're like a couple location business, it can be pretty affordable. The downsides of it is you sort of have to know how to set all that stuff up. But once you get it all set up, it makes it really easy to spread out your reviews to a bunch of different locations. So maybe if you have 10 locations, kind of what Ryan was talking about, where you're focusing all sending them on one, you send a bunch to that one, and then you have to switch and send a bunch to another one. You won't really have to switch that sort of stuff out. It'll sort of automate the process and send it where you want it to go, or you can even program it to send it at random ones. So whenever you get a review, it really doesn't matter which location you got the business at, right? It's just going to sort it to wherever you want it to go at random intervals.
Sure. And I mean, really, the key thing about automation are the follow-ups. That's the biggest thing. I don't know if we haven't done the survey in a while, but we know back in the day, we were looking at all our clients and really at what part of the sequence people were the most likely to leave a review. And I think that a lot of business owners, they're probably used to, giving that great experience, expecting a review in return, send out the one email, maybe one text message or SMS, and then expecting the review that first time. Maybe the second time, but on average, we saw a lot of times that the response really happens between right around like the third or fourth request. And so it sounds like a lot, and I'm not saying you do it every single day. You're going to span it out over a certain period of time, but yeah, if you do it every 3 days, and then of course you don't want to do it 10 or 15 times, it seems pretty excessive or aggressive at that point. But we do have sequences that are 5 or 7 touch points and do more often see the review fulfill around the third or fourth request mark. And maybe you're doing an email the first time, SMS, email, some people that if they have the time, and again, if this the reviews are really important to you, some people have called. I know that sounds like a lot. Some people will send a postcard. It's okay if the touch points are different, but again, third or fourth could be the expectation.
Yeah, so keeping that in mind, there's a realistic expectation of how many touch points and how long it's really going to take for you to do something like that. So, if it's every 4 and you got to wait every 3 days, you do the math how many days it's going to take for you to actually get a review. And again, it's not going to be 100% conversion rate on this. I mean, if you got like a 50% conversion rate, I would say that would be an amazing conversion rate, and you should congratulate yourself because you're doing a great job and your
Yeah.
customers are really engaged and they want to leave you a review. But most of the time, you're talking maybe if you're doing it at scale, or it's in like the 10% range of actually getting a review, which if at scale, that can be an amazing amount. I mean, that can be like 1,000 reviews like coming in, right? Just depending
Yeah.
on what type of business you have.
And then so as far as the rating, people obsess about this too. I think there's plenty of data to support that the goal doesn't have to be a 5.0 out of 5.0. That's pretty difficult. We have done surveys that have shown that in some instances, 5.0 appear to be almost too good to be true. Expect some people to be disgruntled or not 100% satisfied. So, yeah, I've seen instances where people actually trust a 4.8 more than a 5.0, but that doesn't mean you have to facilitate negative reviews for that reason. Just keep doing, obviously. But 4.7, 4.8, totally fine. On the other side, if you're hanging around a 3.8, you got some work to do. And so, I mean, what do you do if you have actually, before I even ask that question, haven't we worked with people that have inherited bad situations, such as purchasing a business or taking over a location? And they're like, crap, I have a 3.8 with 200 reviews, and that's going to be a tough hurdle to overcome.
Yeah, a lot of it just depends on what the total number of reviews are and if you can really move the needle and get more reviews to push that up. Now, there's a lot of things that you can do, a lot of strategies to try and fix that. A lot of times, if you don't have a ton of reviews, maybe you're changing locations, you bought this thing or something like that, it's just time to make a new listing altogether and close that old one down and start from scratch, right? Not a bad solution if you're able to do that. But let's say you're not, you're still there. Google won't let you get rid of the reviews, even with the change of ownership, because it is still the same business, which is unfortunate. When you're in that situation, the first thing you try and do is try and get some of them removed. Well, I guess really the first thing you do is respond to everything on there. I know it's not really a ranking factor if you respond to the reviews at all, but I think there's another ranking factor, which is, how users interact with your listing that we're going to talk about in the coming weeks. And that's definitely going to affect that one, right? So you always want to be responding to especially the negative reviews. Positive reviews are good to respond to as well. But it gives you a little bit of opportunity to communicate with your clients and show other people that you're communicating with them. You're not going to get any ranking benefit from stuffing keywords in those responses, unfortunately. If you could, everyone would already be doing it every day, all day. So don't really worry about that. Just worry about actually, giving a good response to the customer.
Yeah, we know without doubt that the replying is essential. We know that people go to the reviews, and even if you have, it's adequate 4.5 and above. I know what I do, and I know a lot of people do. You can click on the newest, the oldest reviews, the highest, the lowest. I am not a unique consumer where I go and I click lowest reviews immediately and I look at the 1-star reviews and I see how the business owner interacted with those individuals. And if they do it and they don't accept, responsibility, or they actually try to submit some backlash, it might affect my decision making.
Yeah, definitely. So let's say you've done a good job and you responded to all these. What else do you want to do? Well, if they're really, really negative, or maybe you'll get lucky and they're off topic or it violates some sort of guideline that Google has for reviews and you can request to have them removed and you can get them removed. I can tell you that the likelihood of that happening is pretty low, especially if they've been there for a while. It's just pretty low in general. Google isn't very timely about getting those things reviewed and removed or either of those things, at all, right? So I don't think they're particularly worried about doing it. Occasionally, you can get stuff taken out. I would say still do it. It's worth a shot, but I wouldn't expect it if you have a listing and it has negative reviews. It just probably isn't going to happen. And I've seen them where they've been way off topic. They've been left like multiple reviews left by the same person under different accounts, right? And it's obvious it's the same person and the new account that's their only review. But Google tends to just sort of not worry about that and just let you worry about it and deal with it. So, still try it, but it's probably not going to work. So don't get your hopes up.
So that Yelp effect, it's really rubbed off on them. Just showcase the worst and then suppress the best.
It does appear that way. So let's say you've done those things, you've responded to them, you've tried to get bad ones removed. What are you going to do now? Well, the only thing that you can do now is work the numbers game, right? And it's just looking at the averages and what you're going to need to bump that average up. And so I've seen throughout my years of doing this, if you have like a 4.3, you're really not going to rank very well. And if you drop from somewhere higher than that to a 4.3 or lower, you're going to definitely lose some rankings. I'm not saying use like a 4.4 as like your goal. It should be higher than that. Like Ryan was saying earlier, you don't need a 5.0, but I would definitely, if you're at a 4.3 or lower, you're going to have some problems ranking. And you're just going to have problems getting customers because they're going to see that. And that's a lot of dings against you, especially if you have a bunch of reviews and you're just going to lose customers that way because they're actually going to read those reviews, especially if all the competitors around you are at a 4.8 and they're at or a 4.7, right? So you're just going to be at a disadvantage. And the only way that you're going to be able to overcome that is just pumping up a bunch of good reviews into that listing.
Yeah, like you said, it's really going to be relative to industry. It's really going to create the benchmark. I mean, if you have a 3.8 right now for your business and you're doing oil changes and then everyone around you is in the 3.5, 3.6, 3.7, your 3.8 might be the golden standard. And you're good. And then all you can do is go up from there, strive for 4.0 and just keep on widening that gap. But yeah, we work in plenty of industries where the average rating, it could be a 4.9 and like 1400 reviews. And yeah, that's going to be quite a challenge. Some instances we see that in dental when they have a lot of patients and they do a great job, it's well over 1,000. So you always know what you have to work towards because it'll be very apparent when you just do a quick search in your particular industry.
Yeah, another thing we get asked a lot too is if your customers leave you a review with some keywords in it, is it going to help you rank organically in the map pack for those terms? And there was a time where that definitely was true. I have not seen that be the case in the last year, but there's still a really good reason to do it. And the way that you can filter reviews has become a lot more sophisticated over the past year. And Google looks through those reviews and it finds things that are common comments, right? Keywords that most people are talking about. And it'll allow you to filter reviews by that. So you can look exactly for those things that you're searching, right? So, you still want to ask your customers to talk about their particular experience, right? What they actually purchased or what they actually got, because it is going to help you with some of those other ranking factors, like how customers are using your profile and interacting with it. Right. So definitely work that into your overall strategy when you're talking to customers for reviews. The last thing we're talking about is third-party reviews. They don't really go directly into the Map Pack ranking signals. I don't think so, but they can be shown up on your listing as you've seen. You don't really have any control over showing that. So if you ever search your own business and you get that snippet and you can see a different rating based on those aggregate reviews of those things, right? And they don't just look at one website. Sometimes they look at like a combination of websites, and usually they tell you where they pulled them from. So it is important to monitor those things and make sure that you're at least getting a good rating on there. You don't, I think, have to worry about like the velocity or the quantity that those are coming in on something like a Yelp, or if you're in the legal industry, there's a million types of little websites that rank lawyers and things like that that you can have a rating on. And depending on your industry, there can be a bunch of other ones. But you want to just have an overall idea of like where people get information about the industry that you work in and where they might look at reviews. Maybe it's Angie or something like that. And you want to make sure that like, you're in that range of like, 4.5 to like 5.0, right? So it just looks good based on competitors, and it's not like a glaring issue that you have on your listing. So if you have a 4.9 on the Google Business listing, but you have a 2 and it's pulling in a Yelp or whatever, I don't think they really pull in Yelp normally, but they usually pull in some other websites. It's just going to be like a kind of a glaring issue that's going to show up on your listing.
Yeah, and that's a good point because I know that there are some, like, well, when I say some, probably many fly-by-night kind of review companies have come and go, and we don't see as many, like, the next up-and-coming directory or review or social site like we used to because it's just so hard to kind of carve out your thing with everything going on in SERPs nowadays. But it does make you think, like, is there anywhere that you really should be preemptively, like, allocating some resources so it was, like, Trustpilot can actually make a little bit of headway there. One thing that people do focus on a little bit sometimes is like even Glassdoor and Indeed. Some people want to know how your team likes working there or how you employ people and what happens if you have poor reviews there.
I
What, how do you be
definitely
proactive there?
look at Glassdoor, but it's usually at the places that I don't work at anymore. And
Right. And
I want to see what's happened.
there's an interesting one with the Morgan's. The largest B2C law firm in the country, and they have this plaque that's absolutely misleading, and it says 1.7K 5-star verified reviews, and you can barely make it out in the footer. And you click through, and it's actually SiteJabber. And I'm looking, and I go, SiteJabber? Yeah, what the hell is that? That I've heard that somewhere. Why
Sounds
is one of our
familiar.
features on the website? Yeah, and of course they don't have 5.0. They have a 2.92, which is pretty bad. But they still have it accessible on their website. It does link every footer links to this. So it's like, what is it about this, site that they still want to feel like they own it or have it featured on the website if it's not really putting them in the best light? Is there something to this, other review aggregator?
One good thing about a lot of those review aggregators, though, is unlike Google, they tend to do a better job at policing negative reviews and then getting rid of negative reviews that are on your listings. So I know, like with Yelp, and this is like if you have a paid Yelp, it always comes down to paid outside of Google. If you can get stuff that's like they'll request basically a verification from the person that left the review, and if they don't respond, they usually take the review down. Right. So they'll sort of work with you to mitigate things that come in as negative. So that is a plus side of it. If it's out there, it becomes a little easier to clean things up if you have a low rating on those sites. All right. So we covered, I think, pretty good topic over reviews and gave you guys a few strategies for generating some more or mitigating some of the issues if you have issues with reviews. I just want to thank everyone for listening. We really appreciate all of our listeners, and we'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to us at SEOzenotherlies@gmail.com. Let us know how you're doing or some topics that you'd like for us to talk about. And be sure to like, share, and subscribe anywhere that you listen to this podcast. Spotify would be great if you listen to us there, or Apple Podcasts, not Google, because that went away, unfortunately. There's no more Google Podcasts, which is sad. With that, thank you again so much for listening. I'm Paul Warren.
And I'm Ryan Klein.
And this has been another episode of SEO's Dead and Other Lies.
See ya.
Goodbye.